This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
And this is Fighting Bob Fitrakis in the tradition of Fighting Bob La Follette of Wisconsin. I love obscure historical references. But we're talking about the ultimate culture jam, to cite from Cal Lassen. We're talking about occupation movement. And Connie Goodell-Newton was there yesterday on the Oval, on her bike, providing legal services for those occupying the Oval, marching down High Street, going marching into the City Hall, and occupying Columbus, occupying the 614.
And Bob Fitrakis was there, too. You have here today two radical progressive lawyers who are watching out for those of you who are fighting back.
And Bob Fitrakis was in the back of the march, huffing and puffing, pretending like
trying to
he
keep
was
up.
Making sure no police were harassing people in the back, when really it was just mainly me trying to catch up.
Well, you talked to some cops, Bob, by the end of the day.
I did.
Yep.
And my streak is almost unbroken.
They shook hands and said, okay, thanks, see you later.
And I'm like, sup?
Yep.
Okay, but what'd you see on the Oval? What was happening there yesterday?
Well, there were quite a few people rallying. They had been there since 1 o'clock. I got there at about 3:30 or 4 in anticipation of the march from the Oval to downtown. So they had speakers, professors, and I'm not great at estimating crowds, but it looked like they had, like, I don't know, 100 people.
Yeah, I would say around 100.
Yeah. So, and they had speakers all day and events and like a teach-in. So, you know, people were gathering there talking about tuition hikes and how this public university that I went to, Ohio State University, is becoming increasingly more and more privatized every year. And that's a trend that I've seen since I graduated in 2002. I was able to attend school on scholarships, merit-based and low-income based for, you know, and get almost a free college education. I got out of school with pretty little debt, you know, but it seems like as they're trying to court more and more wealthy students and students from out of state so that they can get higher tuition dollars, they're gentrifying the neighborhoods around Ohio State. And there's the campus gateway, which, you know, used to have a bunch of charming dive bars, which have all since gone the way of the dinosaur. So,
yeah, key point there. I remember the heyday back there in the 90s when they had 36 bars in three blocks.
Yeah.
And they started by driving out Papa Joe's. But the college community, the students had created their own community. There used to be Trade Winds, an old hippie head shop. And a lot of that has been gentrified by campus partners.
Yeah. So now it seems like the only bars that are left from that era are Dick's Den, all the way up north by the Dube, the Library Bar, where you can tell your parents you are all the time so they think you're studying, and Bernie's, which is a real dive bar in the sense of the word. But, you know, I used to eat lunch there during the day, and it wasn't a bad place. I used to kind of study at Bernie's a lot, and now it's kind of really a punk rock scummy bar, and I still go there.
All right, and were you there when John Carlos was speaking, or had he already spoke on the Oval?
Yeah, unfortunately, I missed it. What do you know about John Carlos for our listeners?
Man, John Carlos, right? He's the man who in 1968 at the Olympics with his friend, Tommy Smith, was it? But John Carlos, they held up their fist, put on a black glove, bowed their heads during the national anthem, and held up the Black Power salute because there was a boycott movement on because the United States recognized apartheid, racist South Africa, and they were at the games. So in support of solidarity with the people of South Africa. And it really ruined their careers. They were world-class sprinters. They had come in like number one and three in the sprint. You know, as these incredibly fast sprinters, and it really caused them to be blacklisted for years. How dare they embarrass the United States during the national anthem. So it's good to hear that John Carlos is still out there working on behalf of the people.
So I'll have to beg forgiveness for my ignorance, but is John Carlos and the other person, are they African-American? Are they Latino?
Yeah, they're both African-American.
They're both African-American.
Right, and it was part of a movement to get athletes from the United States at first to boycott the Olympics because you allowed this racist regime from South Africa to participate.
Well, the Olympics, unfortunately, have kind of a racist history. I mean, the Nazis were way into the Olympics because they thought that it could show the superiority of the German people and the white race, basically.
Yeah, and then
Jesse Owens
went there.
Oh, yeah, he schooled them.
So, yeah, the long history. And there's also, tying into that history of campus activism, it's really good to see the campuses being occupied by a movement that's anti-corporate. Really, we haven't seen this type of activity on a large scale really since the early mid-70s. It kind of faded out during Jimmy Carter and particularly during the Reagan years with flourishes here and there. For example, the anti-apartheid movement that did build shanty towns in the 80s and 90s, and of course the indie media and anti-globalization and fair trade movements. But this Occupy movement, and Cal Lassen, as I recall, put out the first call for it, I think in July, and he's the in charge of Adbusters. The whole notion of don't drive your car to work, buy nothing day, don't drive your car week, turn off your TV
because,
week.
You know, we can blame the corporations as much as we want for the crappy existence or the crappy circumstances we have. But at a certain point, there are definitely those who will say, well, stop buying what's being sold to you. The consumer also bears a responsibility in what they're consuming. So, I mean, while I think that advertising and flooding the market with a product has a huge influence and that really the corporations are mostly at fault, I have seen a lot of strong people's movements of people who are resisting the corporate system by not consuming a lot.
But what are you going to do, find some third-hand bike co-op and get your bike fixed or buy one there?
Well, luckily that exists, Bob.
Oh, my God. What are you going to do? Go get your computers at Free Geek from volunteering?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Good call.
And, it's possible to buy secondhand. You can buy used, go to thrift stores, buy a used car if you can find one after Cash for Clunkers basically depleted the market of used cars. It is possible to buy used and also to buy local. When you shop local and when you spend your dollar in your community with local business owner, that dollar can circulate 7 times before it leaves. But if you go spend your dollar at Walmart, it's going to leave the community immediately.
It's on its way to China, special delivery.
Yeah, pretty
much. Elasticity is that if you circulate that money locally with small businesses, always much better for the community than if you send it off to megacorp in the global economy.
And, we have the option of using barter and trade. A lot of people who are unemployed have skills. They just don't have jobs. And so, I'm seeing some of my friends with marketable skills barter their skills and, trade, do work trade, trade for money, work independently. And I think that we have a lot of options for barter and trade, mutual aid, and creating a gift economy, which is, kind of build a strong community, give to that community, and, take what you need from it where you can in a healthy way, not an exploitative way.
And again, we've had the First English Lutheran Church that gives away a meal. You've been associated with the Spore. That provides various service for people.
Yeah, the Spore Print Info Shop located next door to the Third Hand Bike Co-op. It is kind of a free meeting space for people who want to gather and, you know, do political activities or, you know, have a meeting or have an activity or a party or a movie screening. And we have served food there to people in our community. And it's a lot of the people that we have fed there have been children, low-income people, homeless people from the neighborhood, and just our friends, too. You know, it's not necessarily charity like rich and middle-class people giving to poor people to assuage our guilt or something like that. You know, it's not the idea of charity and bestowing something on people who are like in need. It's recognizing that we all have needs and we all have the ability to satisfy each other's needs in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but would you live in that neighborhood?
I do live in that neighborhood. Okay. and I enjoy it.
But it's so diverse. There's rich people, middle class people, and poor people all together.
Yeah, that's great.
If you were a real American, yeah. You live in a suburb where everyone has the same bank account, same amount of money, and all look the same.
Yeah, I actually lived in a suburban neighborhood in middle school where the developer had put the same wallpaper in everybody's house in our subdivision. It was horrible. It was It was like pineapples and ducks, I think, were the themes.
All
theme wallpaper.
True Americans will have pineapples and ducks.
Yeah, it was kind of colonial or whatever. So,
and part of that, I mean, with Cal Lassen, it's not just occupying physical space, but also these liberation zones like the Spore, right, where you're creating free space for people to develop an authentic culture. Part of what he called for in the occupations was also to occupy your mind.
Well, that's interesting. I think, you know, capitalism and advertising takes up a lot of space in our mind. If you watch television, I watched television at dinner tonight at the bar.
Just
and
do it.
And it was pretty mesmerizing. I have a hard time when I'm in a public place that has a television to take my eyes away from it and pay attention to the people that I'm eating with. So,
now, in fact, that's a very good point, because studies of television show that it's very sophisticated in terms of drawing people to it. And they find that even when people are out together, their kind of eyes are drawn. And a lot of times, particularly with these, you know, 24-hour news stations like Fox and CNN, they'll have those little crawlers on the bottom, which almost genetically, you know, fear of spiders and scorpions, and we're watching those, and they have all these flashes and alerts and ticker tapes.
I think it's the motion. I think it's seeing something in 2D that's moving that kind of draws people's attention in.
And wait till
everyone gets hypnotizing.
3D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, with the computer age, you have the mesmerizing television that is kind of one-way communication. Now you have computers that are more interactive, and I see a lot of children, you know, kind of, I'm worried that they're getting addicted and starting to have like media addictions, just like people have a television and video game addiction. You know, I see a lot of children on computers all the time, and I wonder if it's unhealthy.
Well, it's often unhealthy when they're doing things that they think are exercises, like playing various video games, when they're getting obese and they're not actually going outside and doing real exercise.
Yeah, there have been people who have died recently playing World of Warcraft because they didn't get up from their seat and they got blood clots and died.
That's why they call it World of Warcrack, because it is addicting. So when you look at this occupation movement, what do you suppose he meant by occupy, you know, your mind, your own mind?
Well, I mean, I suppose, I haven't read it, and so I'm just giving my best guess, but I would suppose that it means kind of, you know, thinking for yourself and not letting corporate messages infiltrate your skull, building community, being in control of your own thought processes. Do you have a better?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the old notion, right? Amboy Dukes
before
Ted Nugent went right. Journey to the Center of the Mind, right? Mm-hmm. Or I Can See for Miles and Miles.
Yeah.
But really, that whole notion that really came out of the counterculture, psychedelica, right? Psych's the mind. And Delos is clearly, right, to see clearly what's in your own mind to go in there and take a look around and think about who really controls the culture, who controls the symbols, right? The branding. So the key thing is, did they ever get Connie Goodell Newton in junior high or elementary girls? Did she become a Spice Girl? Did she want a certain brand of clothing? I'll admit, I tried to have a Beatles haircut.
So, Didn't work well. To me, it also means like having a healthy amount of skepticism and being a free thinker. This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
So was there ever a point when, you know, they kind of got you, sucked you in when you were in elementary?
Yeah.
Or middle school?
I would say high school. You know, I love fashion still. And so I really loved fashion and wanted to be a fashion model when I was in high school at one point. But there was a certain point, you know, I knew that I didn't really, I wasn't quite anti-capitalist yet at that age, but so I didn't really have like an analysis of things. But I knew that I didn't want to like advertise and be materialistic and things like that. So I knew that those weren't my values. But I think I really liked art, and so I really wanted to be a fashion model. I love fashion and clothes and just, you know, putting things together and the visual aspect of it. But I realized at a certain point that I didn't want to market things to people. I didn't want to be part of that capitalist process of, you know, maybe if I was a successful fashion model, people would see me and they would want to, you know, have something that they didn't have, and they might feel bad about themselves or something, because that's basically what advertising does. And so I didn't want to be a part of that and, you know, to make people want to buy things that they didn't have, or to make themselves, you know, to make people not feel good about themselves. So I went through modeling school in high school, and then after that, I just kind of quit.
But I thought you went to a Catholic high school. No, the latest in Catholic schoolgirl wear.
Nun wear.
Notice the
uniform.
New
I was a
habit.
Uniform model. No, yeah, and actually, I think I was very resistant to going to Catholic high school. I went to Bishop Watterson, and I was pretty resistant because I loved fashion. I didn't want to wear uniforms, and I thought that, you know, my clothing was an expression of myself. And I guess going through Catholic high school, where everybody wore uniforms, I kind of came to realize that, you know, your expression of yourself isn't necessarily outward, and your individuality isn't necessarily your outward appearance. And it definitely gave me a stronger sense of self to kind of have that uniform and, you know, realize that people were not judging me based on my clothing. And I was really able to focus on developing my mind at that age and developing my critical thinking.
Now, I've always wondered, is it really the problem with being a creative, say, fashion designer, you know, entrepreneur, or is it the problem of, here is the brand? We make our clothes in sweatshops in the third world. We pay people 40 cents an hour with dictatorial, and then we come back and brand it, even though we spent $3 on it and paid the workers, you know,
$0.03
for something, Liz Claiborne jacket that sells for $178.
Yeah.
And then we brand it with advertising. So the problem to me isn't the creativity and fashion that you're
right.
attracted to, but that kind of corporate capitalist machine that then says everyone this year will wear low riders.
Right.
And
yeah,
next year it will be skinny jeans.
Yeah, that's a huge problem, Bob, is just the people who are exploited by this system. You know, maybe it is fine to like fashion and to like looking good or to look artistic, but then when companies capitalize on that and brand it and exploit people, it becomes really problematic. And that's something that I wasn't tuned into until I was a student at OSU working with USAS, United Students Against Sweatshops, and they're a group that's still in existence and they're still active today. And they were probably a lot of those people were probably at Occupy the Oval and Occupy Columbus.
All right, occupying the 614, they marched from the Oval down to City Hall, and then they went over to the Capitol. So yeah. There's so many different elements to this Occupy movement, which really is an anti-corporate capitalist critique.
Well, and reclaiming the commons. Let's talk about the commons, Bob. I mean, we have some common spaces, you know, that are public spaces in Columbus that are not really being open to the public as in the way that they should.
Mm-hmm.
So Columbus Commons is a perfect example. It's a space that, you know, I think, do you know the details on that? We pay for it with our tax dollars.
Sure, well, what happened?
Give us a summary of that.
I will give you the summary. You know, back in the beginning in the late 70s, they wanted to build something downtown. They got different federal grants, urban development grants, which are UDAG grants. And they really couldn't figure out what to do. And there was this nonprofit, Capital South Development, of the wealthiest people in Columbus, other than Les Wexner, the Wolf family and others. And they really were going on what to do. And they eventually went over and borrowed tens of millions of dollars from the city, which they still owe a substantial amount of that money. Mm. They never paid back their interest, and it was Capital South Developments. And then suddenly they came up with an idea, let's build a mall. So they build this mall. It sticks around for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's still relatively new. And then they tear it down because
I miss the mall,
Eastern.
Bob.
And now it was the mall could have been a great incubator for small businesses,
yeah,
including Future Fashion Models of America, that are small, right? They're not corporate Polaris-type branding operations. It would have been a great alternative business incubator for creative ideas. But they didn't do that. So then they take this land, really, which is owned by the city. You know, there's not the city defaults gets the land back, but then it leases it back to Capital South for some ungodly amount of time. I can't remember where this
is. Is it 100? Do they have a 100-year lease, basically?
Yeah, basically.
So they have a 100-year lease.
So it's our land, but it's leased out to this development corporation that took our public money, built a mall, and then tore it down.
Yeah.
When it, you know, it had marble. It was really in the interior.
It was a neat building.
This money.
Yeah, and I used to like to go there. It was easy to take the bus down from campus to, you know, go shopping, which I definitely liked at that age.
So yeah, and so then they just destroy it. But they destroy it by allowing Easton and Polaris, by using our tax dollars, our water, our sewage, our highways to create these new developments, you know, out in the outlying areas where the suburbs are, and then convince everyone that we should shop at Easton or Polaris.
Yeah, and, you know, we have to drive our cars out there to go shopping now. Mm-hmm. I used to be able to walk downtown to go to the mall.
And speaking about branding, right, on our highway, there's the little sign, Easton.
Yeah.
You know, in metal, which, well, they paid for it, but it's our freeway. We're branding.
Yeah,
you know, our
public spaces.
Yeah.
Well, and so now we have the Columbus Commons. We have Occupy Columbus down at the State House. Why aren't they at Columbus Commons? It looks like it is a community open space, right? Well, it seems the private owners of Columbus Commons, even though they're calling it the Commons, are not allowing the common people to occupy Columbus Commons.
It's just like the free range movement. People were free ranging, but no, they closed in with fence. The ranchers came along, so you couldn't drive your cattle. And before that, the ultimate free range, the buffalo that belonged to the Native Americans.
Yeah.
But they came in, right? Shot all the buffalo, let them rot, put the Indians on reservation, and really destroyed that common culture of the Lakota, of the Dakota, what we would call the Sioux, but also the very concept of a commonwealth, which is part of the commons, where there's certain things that are so valuable and they really come from a creator, or they're here naturally, mm-hmm, that no one has a right to usurp them and grab them and destroy the commonwealth.
Right. Or, you know, we just decide that we have enough wealth as a society that we want to share it with people. I mean, what's wrong, you know, what's wrong with that? I think that There is enough wealth to go around, but there are people who are not sharing, and that is one thing that Occupy Columbus is about. It's about the 99% versus the 1% of the wealthy people who have everything, basically. The rest of us are unemployed and poor and have no health care. Well, I'm very glad that this movement is happening, especially after seeing the Tea Party and the popularity they were able to achieve, which was basically like a pro-corporate kind of popular movement. It was kind of disturbing.
Well, yeah, it was, and really it was more of a astroturf, a couple wealthy guys come in. I mean, there's this sentiment, populist sentiment, right? Obviously right-wing popular in that sense, where people feel something's wrong, and then you get these wealthy Koch brothers to come in and go,
fund it.
Yeah, it's other people that have pensions and stuff. They're your problem.
Yikes.
And you see that, of course, in issue two, right? The, you know, vote no on issue two. But part of that is this notion that if you have health care and a decent pension, somehow you're a freeloader.
Well, I'm really glad that the Occupy movement is able to provide an alternative to people, you know, from the Tea Party movement. It's an alternative that actually, you know, I think speaks to the real problem, which I perceive as corporate greed. And it gives people an alternative and a choice, so that they can decide when they're going to rise up against the system, which system are they rising up against? And, you know, it doesn't make any sense to destroy a lot of the public benefits that we have, you know, if we're worried about being poor and not, you know, struggling along. That doesn't really make sense. So I'm glad that this has provided people an alternative and an outlet and another message to develop and work on.
And that's the ultimate culture jam, questioning the very foundation of multi or transnational corporate capitalism, to look at this very structured, and also they're questioning corporate personhood, to look at this corporate entity that you and I know as lawyers, they teach us a legal fiction, where it's really soulless, and it's not a person, and to somehow make these contracts and this board a person and give them real right, it is really crazy, because the very structure of a corporation is to maximize profit at any cost to the shareholders at the expense of the community, at the expense of the Commonwealth and the good of the people.
So basically the corporate board is accountable to the owners of the corporation, the shareholders, and there could be an alternative vision where the board of a corporation is also accountable to other stakeholders in the community, such as the workers, the community at large, the environment, and other people who are affected by the corporation's actions. And so I hope that this will be a trend, a growing trend, as time goes on. But right now, it doesn't seem to be. Also, as an animal lover, and, you know, it seems like the property personhood distinction or whatever is totally backwards. A lot of people would identify their pets, their furry loved ones, as people. But animals are regarded as property under the law, whereas corporations, the corpse of the corporation, you know, it's actually viewed as having personhood. So I think that's pretty backwards. And I would move to reverse that, so that animals have more of the same rights that humans do.
Particularly those endangered species and exotic animals that were recently slaughtered in Ohio. Just a tragedy.
Yeah, what about their civil rights? I was really, really upset about that. You know, it seems like they could have gotten tranquilizers and shot them with tranquilizers and, you know, tasers. They could have tased them. I don't know.
And it seems like they could add good policy in the first place and not allow people to cage for their private entertainment.
Absolutely.
Rare and endangered species that need to be reintroduced back
into the wild. Yeah.
I mean, we should be expanding their habitat.
Well, this is Fight Back. This is Connie and Bob reporting on Occupy Columbus and Occupy the Oval. This is Fight Back on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
Occupy your mind.